Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say
your name. Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is, wow, what day is today? It's Friday, March 22nd, 2013. My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks.
And this is the Majority Report.
The award-winning Majority Report.
Thank you for fixing me on that one. All right. We are broadcasting live in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City.
My name is Matt Binder.
I'm Michael Brooks. Did we already say that?
I said it was the joke.
How you doing, folks? Just got a little bit of a late start going here today. We're rushing. It's good to be with you all. We're holding it down again as Sam continues to fulfill important family obligations. And I think we're doing an okay job, buddy.
I think we are, too.
I think we're doing all right.
I think we are.
Well, either that or we just have an incredibly kind audience.
Well, I haven't heard much about yesterday's show, actually.
Yeah. So maybe, well, it's because it's the new norm.
Yeah.
We're here. Sometimes we need to
We're the old news now.
We need to step in for our permanent sub, Sam Cedar, occasionally.
Yes, that's true.
You know, remind people who the real hosts are. We have a great show for you today, folks. It's a casual Friday, which besides, obviously, Sam being away, is going to be normal. We have Cliff Schechter, the great political maestro Cliff Schechter, is coming on. Then we have film guy Matthew. Him and Matt get to, I think they're actually going to discuss movies this time.
I think we will. Maybe we might even have some special guests giving us movie reviews.
Maybe some special guests.
That's what I heard. I don't think you're going to want to miss that, actually, everybody.
Rumors are afloat that there's going to be some
pretty big guests.
Some major pulls while Sam was away, actually.
We pulled through.
We sort of did some pretty significant stuff here, folks. I'm going to say, if I could say, a little bit of housekeeping.
Wow. We're just transforming.
Yeah, we're just transforming. It's amazing. Monday, Matt and I will host the show again. Still getting a guest for that, but it'll be somebody great or two people great. And then next week we're on vacation, but Sam, in the selfless devotion that he's known for his audience, has pre-recorded some amazing interviews for you. Guys like Steve Brill on that new blockbuster article on Time, on the healthcare industry and healthcare efficiency. So even as we're away, we will still be here for you. Great shows coming up. So stay tuned. In just a little bit, I'm going to be talking with Cliff Schechter.
I'm just watching as Michael feeds off everything he learned from promo master Sam Cedar.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. It's like osmosis.
Let's do this.
All right, bro.
Cliff's up next.
Cliff is up next.
Yeah.
I sit 90 degrees underneath palm trees, smoking BDs as I burn my calories. Brooklyn roof tops become Brooklyn TPs. Who that be? Enemy, wanna see the death of me. From Hawaii to Hawthorne, I run marathons like Wuka Watan, I'm a true champion like Farrakhan, reads his daily Quran. It's a phenomenon, lyric, rap, I rap my
what's going on? Armageddon come, you know when we soon done. Gun by my side just in case I gotta run. A boy on the side of Babylon trying to run like you're down with Mosiah. What's going on? Armageddon come, you know when we soon done. Gun by my side just in case I gotta run. A boy on the side of Babylon trying to run like you're down with Mosiah.
Fuji La from my favorite album when I was 12 years old. Fuji's The Score. It's a classic album. Folks, we have a classic guest coming up for you in just a moment. But first, we need to play his theme song. That's right. Cliff Schechter's theme song by the great Jimmy Reefercake.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations. And strategy, you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
You like how we harmonized on that, Cliff?
Yeah, that was definitely me. I give all credit and love goes to Mr. Reefercake for that song that so many people have complained to me becomes an earworm, and they cannot get it out of their head. I'm telling you, Reefercake, man, the guy's got skills.
You know what's amazing is, like, there's no reference point for it. Like, usually if you're kind of humming something addictive, it's something that everybody's at least heard of. Like, you could say, oh, that's the new so-and-so song or whatever. Getting caught humming that, people are like, what are you talking about?
We do our best.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm talking about Cliff Schechter, man. That's a major Democratic political brain right here.
I don't know if I'd call it major. It is a brand. It exists.
It's a good brand. And I just have to say, someone pointed out, you can't see me, Cliff, but I'm actually wearing a blazer today. And that's in honor of you, buddy. Even though it's casual Friday.
Wow. I didn't know I inspired that kind of effort on your part, honestly. Seriously. I'm not worth that kind of an effort. Well, if you'd like, I'll put either my wife or my kids on the phone and they'll explain that to you.
Whoa. Actually, the truth was I put on this shirt as I was running out the door this morning, and I noticed it was pretty wrinkled and threw on a blazer. So that is the more prosaic explanation of why some commenter said I wasn't looking too casual for the day. But at any rate,
the word prosaic into casual Friday.
Ooh.
Let's move.
I'm getting it from all angles. I'm getting it from all angles. All right. So basically, I want to kind of go over. We had a great call yesterday asking us about the House Progressive Caucus put out a budget, which I guess actually got an up or down vote in the House yesterday, kind of quietly, or the day before. A lot of Democrats voted against it. There's three budget plans out there right now, and I'll just kind of review them really briefly, but I want to get into how they're being covered and talked about in the media. So basically, Paul Ryan, you know, he released a plan, he re-upped. It's the usual just kind of sociopath's delight of a budget. It's, you know, slashes food stamps, slashes Pell grants, eliminates healthcare reform, except actually for cuts and additional taxes, which are scored into it. So it's, you know, he's actually getting a bit of backlash. I think he's getting less of a pass from the media, which is interesting, and I would love for you to address.
Yeah, he's funny because nobody likes him anymore.
Right.
And I find that funny as hell. There's a piece, I think Howie Kurtz wrote it, and Howie Kurtz is always a good barometer of what inside Washington is thinking.
Right.
He wrote it for the Daily Beast on how, like, no one's really taking Paul Ryan seriously anymore. It's worth a read. It's sort of how basically when he ran such an unbelievably dishonest campaign, you know, the plant shut down in Janesville because of Obama. Oh, wait, that happened like 2 years or a year before Obama came into office. You may remember that one. He's stealing $716 million from Medicare. Oh, wait, my budget does the same thing. You know, I mean, and it wasn't stealing. It was taking it out, savings from overcharging. But, you know, all the dishonest things he said, which were, and that number is 716 billion, by the way, not million.
Right.
But all the dishonest things he did during the campaign kind of took the glow off of him. The fact that there ever was a glow tells you that it's Washington.
exactly, right.
But he still probably does wear his hat slightly cocked back when working out. And that's important. The fact that he's doing P90X, I do miss all those stories about what a hard working out man he is. Look, everything came out during the campaign about just what a complete hypocrite he is, and sort of his talking about brands. His brand was kind of destroyed, one that never was deserved, as Paul Krugman pointed out again and again. The guy was basically a fraud that drew a bunch of numbers on a wall, and none of them made any sense, and none of them were based upon reality. And I think it's sort of like, you know, sometimes things, it takes sort of a critical mass for something to happen.
Right.
And I think maybe the whole new budget eliminating Obamacare was maybe the thing that threw it over the edge, where people were like, okay, just give me a break, buddy. You're not serious. You're not putting out a budget that anybody's paying any attention to that's realistic in any sense of that word. And, you know, there are realistic budgets out there that come from the center and the right, ones that I disagree with, ones that do terrible things, in my opinion, to the social safety net, but at least the numbers add up.
Right, absolutely.
And they're not complete fallacies. This guy is a joke, and we all seem to know it. We knew it, but everyone seems to know it now, so that's kind of nice. I think his approval rating is at 35% now. And for all of those out there, a reminder to all of you that if we can get someone good to run in his district again, he's in a district that's a swing district that he only got like 53% of the vote or 54% of the vote last time in his congressional district. The dude is vulnerable.
Yeah, he's very vulnerable. And I think, you know, just the kind of two only additional things to really note about Paul Ryan, I think – one, with regards to him specifically, I think what was so stunning about the campaign and his lies during the campaign about things like the plant closing down were that they were so that point could have been illustrated and that talking point could have been hit with, you know, literally dozens of other examples. So he started to come out like, yes, have plants shut down during the Obama administration in the industrial Midwest? Of course,
right.
You know, I mean, I'm sure, of course, they've shut down during every other administration. But the point is, just for purposes of making that point in his speech, he was reaching for lies that seemed so lazy and pathological and sort of disconnected from the reality of basic monitoring that it just was like, what, you know, what do you kind of take us for collectively? And I think that's what started to offend the press, I would assume as well. And I guess the other thing, and I think this draws into the second question that I want to get to, because you mentioned other budgets, and, you know, Patty Murray put out the Democratic Senate budget. That's a very kind of conventional centrist document, trims some spending, closes some loopholes, bumps up some taxes. You know, it's not great. It doesn't really seem to do much. That's kind of a status quo budget.
Right.
And then with Paul Ryan, but I think with Paul Ryan is like, the default now is that he's not to be taken seriously. But the default 8 months ago was that he was to be taken profoundly seriously. And then you look at something like the Progressive Caucus budget, which again, you know, okay, so this is a very – it raises taxes significantly on upper income bracket. It has, you know, I think –
And one thing I'll say about that,
yeah,
I don't mean to cut you off, but I think
it's
hugely important is that we still walk around with these definitions, you know, that are handed down in many cases from the 1970s and 80s, you know, of what wealthy is and what – I mean, you know, people have started making with our growing income disparity and the fact that also, well, it's, you know, it's 2013 now, not 1978. People have started making vast, unbelievable, really, sums of money.
Absolutely.
In certain sectors, and we know what those sectors are, of course. To treat, as we do right now, someone who makes $250,000 or $400,000 or whatever it is and say that everybody above $400,000, as if somebody making $400,000 is the same as somebody making $400 million,
absolutely,
is crazy. You know, and so the Progressive Caucus budget, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if I'm correct, they have a surtax at some point, and hopefully you can help me and remind me. I should be better prepared, and I apologize for that.
Oh,
at what point it is. But when you're making, I don't know if it's $10 million, I don't know if it's $100 million, but it's at some point where you're making some outlandish sum of money where your tax rate would effectively go up to about 49%. which, by the way, for people, that is still lower than the Reagan era tax rates before. That's the second tax cut in 86 for most of Reagan's term. You had a 50% tax rate for people who were at the top. So just to be clear about that, for everybody's, and starts lionizing Reagan. Reminder, during Eisenhower, that top rate was like 91%.
Oh, absolutely. No, absolutely. And that's a really, really crucial point you're making, because I think that what a lot of people say sometimes when it's a very standard Sunday morning talking point, and it's not an illegitimate one, that like, look, yes, if you are raising a family in New York City or something and you make a couple hundred thousand a year, sure, okay, you're better off than most of the population, but it's completely – that is a middle-class income in certain places. But what their budget does is exactly what you're saying. Is it really starts to distinguish upper middle class or even somewhat affluent with truly just, you know, astonishing levels of concentrated wealth. And it says, yeah,
right,
we need to bring this back up to a higher tax rate of 49% and open up government investment.
And right. And that was the point I was trying to make. And look, people making a few hundred thousand dollars a year or whatever, you know, you're still doing very well and you're doing better than most, 98-99% of people out there, and that's great, and I don't begrudge anybody that. They should do that well. Everyone
Absolutely.
Should do that well.
Right.
The only point I was making is, you know what, and I think people making $200,000, $100,000 a year and living in New York, you know, or L.A. or something could agree with me on this, that they're not in the same class as a guy running a hedge fund who's making $400 million.
Absolutely.
And so there's a lot of – to me, we've sort of ignored that, and we've done that on purpose. It's the same reason we've allowed the carried interest loophole to continue existing for the Mitt Romneys of the world. We're losing all this money, essentially, that we should be getting not from people that make $200,000 or $400,000 or $50,000 or $25,000, but we should be getting from people that make $400 million.
Right.
Because as Bud Fox said to Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, that's right, I'm going old school on this, how many boats can you water ski behind? You know, there is a certain point where this is ludicrous, and our country needs the money, and you've benefited disproportionately, enormously from the laws and institutions and stability of this country. And I'm sorry, but if you're making $400 million a year, you really need to be giving a lot more back than somebody who's making $400,000 or making $40,000.
And the real logical follow-up question to that is, how many boats is enough, Cliff? No, I'm just kidding.
I like two boats myself.
Yeah. All right, two boats. That seems
Then
really
I can
fair.
Kind of choose. Do I want to go left? Do I want to go right? You let go of one of the ropes, you know what I mean? And you choose to water ski off in that direction. I mean, so I'm going to go with two.
Right.
Some others might go with three. My guess is if you make $400 million a year, you probably could afford about 2,700 of those boats, and that's too much.
Makes total sense. I think
I'll leave it in there for anybody to determine. But I mean, on a serious note, I really feel very strongly about that.
Absolutely.
And I think that we generalize too much, and we throw everybody in there together. And again, this is not to say to people, because a lot of people are listening to this show, and a lot of people listen to what I write or what I say. Not a lot of people, five people, but whoever listens to what I write or what I say. I'm not trying to act like people who make $400,000 or make $200,000 aren't doing very well, because they are. I'm just saying that to throw them in, it really hurts all of us when you start off and you say that's the starting point of being rich, and everybody who makes more than that is the same, because it allows the people at the top to get away with a lot.
No, absolutely. It's a radically different proposition. And I think what I want to get into to kind of tie this together, though, is that so the Progressive Caucus has released this budget that – yeah, it's a genuine center-left budget. It's grounded in the type of economic theories that have been most vindicated over the last couple of years, people like Krugman and everybody who we always reference who are saying we need more stimulus, we need more investment. It makes the type of distinctions you're talking about in terms of rates, because it really goes after the – you know, I think Krista Freeland calls the superclass, right? This is a totally distinct proposition. This is not people, again, who are upper middle class, doing okay, doing well. Fine. That's a very distinct thing. Now, this gets no press hearing. So even as Paul Ryan is finally being rightfully taken to the woodshed a little bit, that's still big news that he's released this ludicrous budget that isn't going to pass, that is like a comical assault on 98% of the population. And now the biggest piece of press cover of writing on this Progressive Caucus budget are two things that I saw. One was Business Insider did this, you know, granted this isn't great methodology, but they did this SurveyMonkey poll of their readers and they gave them three budgets. I laugh to even say it, but I think it illustrates a point. They gave them three budgets. They gave them Ryan's budget, Patty Murray's budget, the Senate Democrats, and Progressive Caucus. And without names attached, the Progressive Caucus budget won. And then David Brooks wrote a piece on the Progressive Caucus budget for the New York Times, which, as a lot of his pieces do, are kind of interesting and have some interesting historical references and don't seem to bear any resemblance to any world that you and I or other sort of sentient beings occupy. So what I'm curious is, like,
no, those Brookses, they're always troublemakers.
Hey, he's selling the brand, man.
You know, I'll join in with you, by the way, on this and say that I'm as guilty as you, because if you're going to get in trouble for having the same name as this guy, I should freely and come out and admit that I attended the same school in New York City up through the eighth grade. Not at the same time, because he's older than me, thank God. But I attended the same school as him, too, so I'm equally as guilty. Although, in my defense, Matt Iglesias, Nick Confessori, and a bunch of other people that you've probably heard of also went to that school. So,
I haven't. Ooh, what is this? Are you filling in for the Name Drop Friday here with Wonks?
I really didn't think the people I'm mentioning were, like, dropping names. If I wanted to drop names, I would tell you cool people I know.
Well done.
Now I'm sure I'll get emails from Confessori and Iglesias and people if they listen to this calling me an asshole, which I probably deserve.
Cool. But, what the hell, man? But why
okay,
seriously?
I'll give you somebody
what
cool.
Is it gonna
name
take?
Drop Friday. Here's somebody cool that went to this very same institution. This is worth a name drop.
Yeah, please.
My first grade teacher at this institution, who was one of the best teachers I've ever had in my life, true story, very true,
yes.
Whose name was Mrs. Duchovny, mm-hmm. who had a son named David, who you may be familiar with, who went to this school is Grace Church. It's in Greenwich Village.
Yeah, he's my pharmacist.
I'm sorry?
I'm kidding, Cliff. Go ahead.
I didn't hear what you said.
He's my pharmacist. I'm joking.
Yes. Hey, his mom was awesome. Don't go off on his addicted sexuality. Oh, wait, I said that. His mom was an amazing first grade teacher, Meg Duchovny, who I loved. And really one of those teachers, when you look back at the ones that kind of set you on your path in all seriousness. Her son, you know, David, was there about 7, 8 years, maybe 9 years ahead of me. And thankfully for Grace Church, it's turned out very well because they have benefited from David's financial success, and they have all sorts of wonderful new facilities and whatever. And yes, David Brooks also went there, and a few of the other characters who I named. So, in Greenwich Village, great school, and by the way, liberal, attached to the Episcopalian Church, not a Catholic school, and very liberal. So there you go.
I believe it. That sounds great. So, but I guess there's just to kind of sum this up. When does the progressive –
I got off on a tangent.
No,
I
just it was a good
one. I busted on you for the Brooks, so I figured I should at the very least admit that I went to the same school as the guy. If the name connects you and sullies your reputation, then I suppose having attended a similar the same institution as this guy should sully mine.
Well, hey, what are we going to do here? I mean, you know, maybe you had more of a choice of what the school you went to than my name, but probably not too much of a choice.
Go ahead.
No, but anyway, so I'm just to kind of tie it up. What is it going to take for the press to cover a progressive caucus budget in the same way it covers a Ryan budget? Considering
that, I think this would be. We may not want this to be a segue into something else that we were, you know, to things we might talk about when it comes to kind of. Well, I don't know if actually we're going to have that meta discussion on this show. That may have been one we had in the past about sort of – we do it a lot, the progressive funding on the left versus funding on the right. We're doing a lot better. There's progressive voices in MSNBC. There are on Current. They will become Al Jazeera America and hopefully do well. There are certainly in some magazines that have done some. I mean, you know, Mother Jones on the gun issue, I'll tell you, is one I work on. And, you know, with the work that David Corn obviously did exposing the 47% video and other stuff. I mean, there are some amazing pieces of infrastructure out there that were out there before but didn't have as loud a voice or weren't out there at all. You know, as of 5, 6 years ago, maybe more than that, a little more than that, when MSNBC featured the likes of Alan Keyes.
You remember the name of his show, I just have to say. Remember the name of Alan Keyes' show on MSNBC?
I don't. Remind me.
Making Sense with Alan Keyes.
one thing that that dude has never done has made sense.
I know.
Since a million?
It would be like...
He was like he was mocking himself.
It would be like being Gentile with Sam Cedar.
I don't make any sense. What are you talking about? I know. What a, if you made like President Obama, if you're listening to the show, you may not like President Obama. You may think he's not, he's too conservative for you. Whatever it is, for his existence, you should probably thank Alan Keyes. Because it's Alan Keyes who ran in that race against him in 2004 for the Senate in Illinois, even though Alan Keyes lived in Maryland, where he got, I think, 30% of the vote. He made sense, let's put it that way. They also, at the time, you may remember, had Michael Savage as a host who told one of the callers into his show who was gay that they should get AIDS and die, which cost him his show on MSNBC. You actually, at that time, on MSNBC, probably had to push it that far to actually get thrown off if you're a conservative. Mary Madeline had a show at some point. Ollie North. We can go through the illustrious history of those who had shows back on the old MSNBC, but let's just say it was certainly no progressive outlet. And so, look, that's improving, right, but you know, you put all the progressive think tanks together, and you will have not near the budget and PR capabilities of just the Heritage Foundation.
Right.
Who's now run by, you know, Jim DeMint. They've even thrown out the sort of false, you know, image that they even care about policy, that they're now essentially just admitting we're just a political operation,
right,
you know, where they used to pretend that they were something otherwise. So, you know, it's going to take some of that. It's going to take the culture further changing. I mean, things move slowly, man. They move slowly, way too slowly so at times. But, you know, and that's what you see, which is the press. You see more and more stories on the growing demographic that favors, you know, gun safety and favors contraception as a right and abortion rights and gay marriage. I mean, we've seen those stories, but look how long it's been pretty obvious that that's a growing demographic now for a good decade. And look how long it took for those stories to finally, you know, that things are changing. And as things change in Washington, the Republicans have still been able to sort of create this false image they've got power because they've been able to gerrymander themselves into power in the House.
Well, and let's get to the gun piece, because I think that that's obviously a perfect illustration of what you're talking about. Now, in the Senate right now, it looks like there may be a bill that will go to the floor with universal background checks. It looks like assault weapons have been taken off the table a couple days ago. What's the status of that, and how is it that even after – I mean, I just think – it's just such an illustration of what you're saying. It's like, how could, you know, essentially how many of these tragedies need to happen? How many poll numbers need to shift? And is the real problem that there is still just an intensity level on the side of gun lunacy that isn't matched by gun sanity, for lack of a better term? Like, what, or is it just corporate money? What's the holdup here?
You know, like so many other things, it's not one factor, it's a combination. Part of that is, again, yes, the media getting used to the new narrative. I predict to you after 2014, the new narrative will be set. Because these guys who especially those who are in any what you would call it all vulnerable districts, some of them, including Paul Ryan, including Johnny Isaacson of Georgia and a bunch of others, seem to be in favor of background checks, you know, as of a month ago. And some of them may still be in the end. You know, the argument right now on background checks is over whether records will be kept. It's not to say that if background checks are done and records aren't kept, they still won't be more effective than not having them, because you'll stop people at the point of sale. And you can prosecute them who are trying to illegally buy guns, who should not be, who are criminals. And you can stop people that are mentally ill and shouldn't be able to buy them. So there's still a lot of – we need that. At the same time, you're hampering some of the effectiveness of it if you just destroy records immediately that you keep on people. It makes it, you know, even people that legally buy guns, well, if they go and then commit an illegal act, it's much easier to trace and find them. You know, again, it's another example of the pro-criminal, pro-terrorist lobby known as the NRA and the people and Republicans and, frankly, too many Democrats who are, by extension, become pro-criminal and pro-terrorist because of the NRA. And you know, already the stuff that groups like Credo, Move On, other progressive groups have done, not to mention what Mayor Bloomberg has done in this effort. And again, as I always do, we'll disclose that I've worked closely with Mayors Against Illegal Guns, and Mayor Bloomberg is one of the co-chairs, as are our many Democratic mayors in addition to that around the country. But continuing from there, you know, the that things have changed, and yet the media sort of picked it up. They've started writing these stories, but this always takes longer than it should. I mean, this race in Chicago where the NRA stooge lost, Joe Baca, who was ousted from his seat out in Los Angeles in 2012 based upon spending against him as an NRA stooge. Numerous other races in places like Michigan, the attorney general in Pennsylvania, who is great on guns, was largely supported by Mayors Against Legal Guns and won. You know, there's a number of races where you could say that people who are fighting for same gun laws have made the difference. And stopping in 2010, one of the people we fought against and helped stop because he failed to prosecute a corrupt gun dealer who then became a contributor was Ken Buck. Remember that crazy guy from Colorado?
Yeah, sure do.
And that became a huge story out there and ended up being part of his undoing, a big part of it. So, you know, as more of this happens, and I predict to you that from stuff I've heard on the inside that I sadly can't share with all of you, but stuff that I see going on the outside too, there's going to be a reckoning in 2014 for people that refuse to do the right thing on this issue, particularly on background checks. It has 90% plus support. It has 87% support in Oklahoma. It has 90% support in North Carolina. Okay?
Right.
I mean, really.
No, when you're talking about background checks, you're getting into the level of like, you know, do you support legislation to ban someone coming up to your front door and smacking you in the face? I mean, it just – it's so obvious.
I don't mean to cut you off, but even on the 10 bullet limit,
right?
I mean, Colorado just passed a law, in the state legislature that's going to be signed that limits it to 15. Mm-hmm. New York went even further than the federal law would and limited it to 7. Right now the what they're trying to do federally is 10. I think there's still a good shot, but I'm telling you, no pun intended, and I didn't even mean that. But if they come out against that, for people to come out against that, then people like me are going to be very clear what you're for. You're for, I don't want to actually say their names because they don't deserve the fame. You're for the Aurora shooter with the 100 drum, magazine walking into a movie theater and shooting 70 people, dismembering people. You're for the shooter in Newtown, Connecticut, being able to go in and shoot kids up, little children, to the point where people can't actually make out who they are. Okay? That's what you're for. Now, right? Because there's no sporting purpose to those. There's no defense purpose to those. They are offensive weapons of war. That is what they're made for. And people like me and other people who have a lot more money than me are going to be very clear about that when we're heading into 2014, I promise you. So I think things are changing, but you're right. When you ask what has to happen, part of it did with Newtown. There were some actually people of conscience, people I respect, who didn't see things exactly the same way as I did. You know, whether they're people who are Democrats, even a few Republicans, who've changed on this and seem to legitimately have had a heartfelt change. I mean, one of them seems to be, for example, the Democratic senator from Pennsylvania, Bob Casey.
Absolutely, yes.
You know, who is not good on this issue and literally seems to have a heartfelt change on this issue because of what he – and so there have been those stories,
right,
of people that actually the human being side as opposed to the politician side of them have come out. But most of these people still by definition, even though the media, the mainstream media, the progressive media people are involved on this issue like they haven't been in years, there still are many people that are politicians first, most of them. And some of them have determined they can support this stuff in the district they're in. Others have determined, well, I might not. And they still don't get what they're up against. They still don't get that the NRA lost 6 of 7 Senate races where they spent real money in 2012. They lost a race against Obama where they spent $18 million overall. That is, in studies that Paul Waldman did for the Center for American Progress pointed out that the NRA has little to no effect on any election they get involved in because they spread their money so
thin. So the NRA is a paper tiger in politics.
That's exactly right. They are a paper tiger.
Yeah.
And for some reason, though, the myth has been largely damaged. Wayne LaPierre opening his frothing, sick mouth.
Right.
And yes, he frothed the mouth on TV when he talked about guns. So think about that. He's a freaking animal. A lot of this has changed things. And there's no doubt we're in a different place than we were even a couple months ago. But we're still not – we're exactly where we needed to be. There's still some politicians that think the NRA's got their back, and they're in more conservative districts, and that's going to help them. And when I say more conservative districts, districts where the polling will only show, 78% of people support background checks, universal
background checks.
And the 10 bullet limit, which by the way has a majority in virtually all districts, also. So, you know, there's going to be a reckoning. And there are going to be some people that are going to pay the price who haven't looked at Joe Baca and Debbie Halverson and other people and seen what can happen to them. They're going to see. I promise you that. So, you know.
Oh, that's great. That's very encouraging. I love the bullishness. So lay down 2014 is a marker where politicians will start to pay real consequences for having no concern and no fundamental commitment to the health and security of a vast majority of the American population through this incredible irresponsible approach.
No, they're not for gun rights.
Yes.
You know, that's what they say they're for. They're anti-public safety.
They're anti-children.
They're anti-cop. That is what they truly are. They are people that support domestic terrorists and arms dealers. That is what they are because they think it benefits them politically. And they're going to find out, a lot of them are, that it doesn't benefit them politically. So, you know, when you ask what has to happen, I think we need that one sea change election.
Yes.
Where instead of a few guys here and a few guys there, a whole bunch of these guys get knocked out. I think that could have been 2012, but 2012 was before Newtown and the media wasn't covering it in the manner in which they are now. Had that happened, had Newtown happened and then 2012, and then the NRA had their 0.83% return on investment, as the Sunlight Foundation pointed out, the worst of any group, I think that we would be in a better place. But, you know, things happen the way they happen in life, and it didn't happen until afterwards. So we need that next election after.
I have to say, I mean, so that's very encouraging. And I just have to say before we move on to the next – make a jump here to the next topic, just on a human level, it is so just devastating and depressing that event needs to even be discussed. I mean, which it literally does need to be, because gun control is the policy issue. That's the public issue as a consequence of that event. But on a human,
yeah,
on a broader level, it is so devastating that it even needs to be discussed as anything other than, you know, just this horrific, profound tragedy. But we have to discuss it because the reality is there's reasons behind it. And the reasons behind it.
Well, and that's the old the rights game. Don't politicize.
Right.
They've politicized a public health issue.
Absolutely.
I didn't politicize it.
Right.
You know, I'm not an ideologue on this issue.
Right.
I look at what public health tells me. I look at what studies tell me. You know, and public health is something I care a lot about. It especially is, you know, one of these things. You know, when it comes to the life of life and death, frankly, in cities, it's something that, you know, and so it affects, you know, it comes down, influences my feelings on a variety of issues, from drinking to smoking to a whole host of things. And, you know, this is another issue where there are a variety of solutions. A combination. It's not just about gun laws, although that's a big part of it. You know, there's a mental health aspect to it. There's a big cultural aspect to it, which I'm trying to work on too. You know, and when it got to the point where if you blew smoke in the same room as, you know, your 4-year-old, people looked at you like you were had two heads.
Absolutely.
Or you thought it was funny that you got in a car and drove drunk and crashed into something. People looked at you that way. That's the way it's going to be soon when you walk around openly with your gun, or you leave your gun unsecured in your home, or other things. And that's the point we need to get to culturally. So there's really a whole number of things that need to change. But demographically, when it comes to that, when it comes to, you brought up the intensity, the sad thing is there's a growing and larger number of intense people who are in favor of gun safety because, sadly, because of people like the NRA and their stooges, they've been affected by this issue because people they know have been hurt or killed. And that's going to be as strong. People are going to be just as passionate about this issue as any gun rights, I put that in quotes, nut out there. And they're a growing group because of the tragedy we've unfurled in this country, not just the new towns, but what goes on in this country every day because of our lack of sane gun laws. So I would rather this not be a political issue.
But
I would rather that, you know, abortion rights not be a political issue.
Absolutely.
But there are a number of things that are social issues that have to do with people's health and welfare that the right has turned into political issues, and so they can't be anything but.
Through gross negligence, irresponsibility, and corruption, they become a political issue. And I want to, and I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, there's not much more to say than that. I want to go to a group of people that, you know, maybe this will be slightly more amusing, but these are people who, they've actually kind of already had their reckoning electorally. It's just they don't know it. And, you know, so I want to talk a little bit about last week's CPAC convention. And then jump into just actually connect these two questions, because I'm interested, you know, sort of wrapping up with your insights on both of these things. So CPAC happened, basically, you know, are you tired of being called a racist panel, which is hilarious in and of itself, degenerated into a racist.
Slavery was good. Hey,
slavery
your house
was good. Intense. Yeah, so that might be a tip of getting. That might be a reason.
They played music for you sometimes.
Yeah, they played
here and there.
Yeah.
You're able to go to the bathroom in a closed environment.
Exactly.
I mean, what the hell more could you want?
I don't
right?
know. Like, I feel like we get this is a whole new thing. I never thought of it that way. Like I always felt guilty when I bought like sneakers made by Chinese sweatshop labor, but now I realize, of course, the kids should be thanking.
You're housing and feeding those kids.
Exactly. I've been looking. I'm just crazy how I've been looking at the world. So, anyways, and Sarah Palin was up there and she, you know, she made a birther joke and she drank soda and, you know, and all the rest and blah, blah, blah. Now, okay, so there's all this kind of clown shows happening. The RNC releases a report, their kind of autopsy as to why they did so badly. And what I find so interesting about this report is they note some of the problems. Like, we're not doing well with women. We're not doing well with Hispanics, African Americans. Now,
we just need to be better about communicating our message to them that they suck.
And this is exactly the point. So last week I did a little riff and I said, look, you know, this is sort of some political history, but, you know, in the 1980s, Democrats, and maybe we like some of the consequences, maybe we don't like some of the consequences, but the reality is when people like Bill Clinton and Al Gore, you know, established things like the Democratic Leadership Council and the Third Way, this was like a genuine policy shift. It just seems like they're going into another attempt at rebranding, at putting a different face on it. There's no fundamental rethinking of anything going on, even in the autopsy report.
I mean, look, you're right. The thing is when I had this conversation with my wife about the other day, you know, she has worked in politics and policy for a long time too. And you know, we're kind of going over all this, and essentially the way I see it from my viewpoint is, you know, when you bring up the DLC and other groups like that, the problem for the left in the 1970s and 80s, frankly, on social issues, and a lot of it was social, you know, some were economic too, but is we were too far ahead of everybody else.
Right.
So the vast center of the country, and I don't mean like centrist as it's described in Washington, you know, I mean the vast sort of people that fall between the poles and have a whole variety of positions, not one sort of position, but feel differently on a variety of issues. They when they looked at both sides, you know, basically they came down more with the guys on the right. That was closer to their thinking than people on the left. And that was a problem for the left. It wasn't a problem morally because, as we know, we've been whether it's our positions on wars like the one in Iraq or whether it's our positions on gay rights or whatever it is, history has borne out that we are always right and they're always wrong. And it will continue to do that because right. They're stupid people who are wrong. bigoted, closed-minded, obnoxious, rural, white losers. That's what they are. You can quote me.
I will.
But
I love it.
Now you have a similar situation. You have sort of the polar mirror opposite of that. And what that is basically the right, which has hung out in the 1850s, has gotten so far behind where we are that there where the left was, and again, I'm not comparing the two positions morally,
in the
polar relationship to the vast middle of the electorate, now the right is just you can't bridge that gap in the way that they are trying to by just faking it because they're alienating everybody else. But they're, you know, and I make that little joke about white guys and whatever. Obviously, look, I'm a white guy. I'm joking. But yeah, older, rural, you know, conservative, more religious, gun-owning white guys, they're driving the train right now. And the truth is that most other members of our society don't see things the way they do.
Right.
And thankfully for us, their demographic is dying off and ours is growing. So that is their problem. So it's sort of like, you know, to further upset Sarah Palin and be the sexist I am, it's just lipstick on a pig. And because that phrase, of course, was made up just to insult Sarah Palin in a sexist way.
Absolutely.
You know, that's my sidebar for right now. But no, I mean, you know, that's really, I mean, they are, I will admit, trying to change the one way meaningfully it seems like they're trying to do anything is on immigration, right. Where even Rand Paul has now come out. And I think their position is going to be, we already have it. We already have amnesty. This is better. I mean, they'll try to message it as best they can. They're going to try to do something on immigration. My guess is it won't be as good as anything that we would want. But they realize that especially with Hispanics, man, they're dead in the water.
No, they're going to try to pivot on that in a big way.
Texas, Georgia, Arizona, one or two cycles away become swing states if they don't fix that problem. North Carolina, Virginia, Florida become unwinnable for them. I think they see that. You know, so they're trying on that, but the truth is that they still have this bigoted core. Their statewide candidate. There's a good chance that their statewide candidate in Georgia is going to be Paul Brown. Right. He is a crazy person. So, when I say crazy person, I mean like Son of Sam almost. I mean, he is somebody that said evolution came from the pits of hell. Like, background checks were invented for that guy. You know what I mean? I mean, like, of course he doesn't want background checks, because if there are background checks, they probably, not only would you take away his gun, you'd take away his car keys, his right to carry sharp objects.
So
maybe
the personal
even his ability
is
to leave
really
home
political
without
with
monitoring
guy.
With an ankle bracelet. So he's running, you know, there's a good chance he's going to be their statewide candidate for the Senate. There's a good chance that Steve King is going to be their statewide candidate for the Senate in Iowa.
Right.
I mean, these are two absolute lunatics.
Right.
So the problem is, and you know, what can they do in the these people that support those lunatics? They can't. And I don't. I mean, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to me to see how they try to be. I mean, Rand Paul can try what he wants, and these guys can try what they want, but they're still going to lose the Paul Browns. And you already see Rand Paul's fighting back and forth with Ann Coulter. There's also the whole entertainment complex.
Right.
And those guys are sick, evil people of the kind that enjoyed what, you know, went on at Abu Ghraib. And I'm not exaggerating, because Rush Limbaugh thought it was funny and made jokes about what went on at Abu Ghraib. They're really sick, psychologically demented people, and they enjoy, you know, exerting their power over others. They enjoy torturing, whether it's physically or mentally. If you don't think they enjoy controlling the Republican Party, that they're just going to give it up, no matter the electoral consequences, they're not going to do that.
Right.
And the irony is that what Ann Coulter said, in a way, I hate to give Ann Coulter credit or anything, was actually kind of true. They're damned either way. They can't win. If they block immigration reform, which they may well do, they're screwed. If they support it, well, they don't support most other things. Here's the little secret that they don't seem to get when they try to pretend that otherwise Hispanics would love us. Hispanics, like all these other parts of the growing coalition we've talked about, as a general, again, you know, I have to generalize here. There's different types of groups. There's Puerto Ricans. There's Cubans. I don't want to. But if we're looking at it overall as a pollster would, overall, more in favor of passing more stringent gun regulations, more pro-choice. Yes, that's right, folks. They are. Than the population
well,
as a whole.
Well, certainly more like universal health care, education spending, and all of those other –
everything
essential.
Economically
yeah,
more and more and more against
absolutely.
Foreign invasions. Point being, they're still a key Democratic demographic, growing one, no matter what the right does. So by passing reform that will allow more of them to vote, they lose too.
Absolutely.
So, and Ann Coulter pointed that out, and I hate to admit it, she's right. But I think that they're screwed no matter what they do.
Even recently,
shown by Jeb Bush's book that came out, where he can't figure out what the hell his position is on immigration.
Even a clock on lithium is right twice a day.
Exactly. Even
my Ann
George
Coulter
Bush
line.
On lithium in a bathtub painting himself naked is right here and there about immigration.
Right.
And yet still his party's not going to be able to figure it out. So that's where they are. And you know, that's the answer to the big question. On guns, and it's that way on abortion rights and contraception, and it's that way on raising the minimum wage and on protecting Social Security and on expanding Medicare. They're wrong on all of that. Their demographic is wrong on everything. And all these other groups, college-educated whites, single women, even non-college-educated and married women are moving away from them. I mean, seriously, they're centered on this one demographic. You can call it the Fox News demographic. It's the same reason Fox News is losing ratings, because unless you come up with something that allows old white rural guys to live till they're 120, Fox is going to lose ratings.
Oh, that's a Sheldon Adelson business investment right there. I just have one final question for you, because I think, though, what's interesting to me, so Chris Christie wasn't invited to CPAC. And if you look at the kind of Morning Joe universe, he is the constant, you know, just consummate example of, he's the responsible conservative, he's the appealing Republican. And I actually think in certain respects there's some truth to that, on the level of, you know, he can do a good Letterman segment. I think, frankly, his obnoxiousness, it plays well where we are in the tri-state area. I think will play terribly in a place like Iowa, but that's sort of for another day. But I want to just be really clear. So when we're talking about Chris Christie, we're still talking about and very unbelievably right-wing guy. So we talk about the party,
marginalized. Anti-gay marriage, anti-choice.
Yes, and I want to just say, because right now there's an anti-gay conversion therapy in the state legislature in New Jersey, okay, which is basically a form of organized, you know, quasi-religious child abuse aimed at gay children. That's what it is, okay? It's paying people to abuse your kids, to torture them out of their sexual identity. Now, Chris Christie, who is known for straight talk, and apparently it's really easy to straight talk when you're, like, you know, screaming at a teacher or something, basically said, in response to whether or not he'll sign this bill, let alone being anti-gay marriage, which
but
he
this
is,
bill, to be clear, is a bill passed by Democrats to ban this kind of
to ban child abuse, to ban gay conversion therapy, which I would call child abuse.
I would agree with you.
I'm of two minds on this stuff in general. Number one, I think there's lots of different deference given to parents in raising their kids. I don't. This is a general philosophy, not to his bill. That's the author of the bill. Generally speaking, on bills that restrict parents' ability to make decisions on how to care for their children, I'm generally a skeptic of those bills. Now, there can always be exceptions to those rules, and this bill may be one of them. Now, I don't hear any straight talk there. I hear BS and nonsense about a child abuse bill. And this guy is like, in addition to slashing taxes for millionaires while he cut through people off of the Medicaid rolls, in addition to opposing gay marriage and all the other things he talked about, this is the guy who's held up as like the moderate savior of the Republican Party, and he's an extreme right winger by any standard metric you would use pre-complete insanity.
Well, in his defense, he's put out the word quietly that whoever gets him the box of the Frosted Munchkins first, that's the way he's going to go. I'm sorry, I can't. You know what? I will never stop making fun of him for being fat, for all the nasty things he said to other people, teachers and others. So, you know what? For anybody who's going to freak out on me on that, I wouldn't make fun of just anybody for being fat, but Chris Christie, I will. It's like, at what point did Dick Lugar not become conservative enough?
Right.
For the Republican Party, you know, now George Bush isn't conservative enough. Karl Rove is a sellout to them. I mean, I consider him a sellout and evil human being in a lot of other ways. But to them, he's a sellout because he doesn't want the extreme right wingers who can't win to be in certain states to be their nominees. I mean, you get to a point where there's a sort of a death spiral of any movement or any organization where it's going down the tubes. We're in weird, uncharted territory for a modern political party in the United States because this kind of thing hasn't happened in a long time. And I don't know what the outcome ends up being. The only thing, I mean, what's propping this up right now is a lot of money from people like the Koch brothers, an entertainment complex that feeds people dishonest information. And even with that, most people still disagree with them, even though they've got Fox and the ratings Fox has and Rush Limbaugh and whatever, playing to people's resentments and fears and things that really aren't accurate and making things up. Still, on these issues we talk about, the vast majority of people don't agree with them. You know, I don't know how this ends up, because you're right. Chris Christie, I mean, you know, what's his name? Bob McDonnell wasn't conservative enough. The people, I mean, you know, remember his nickname when he was running? People were calling him Taliban Bob.
Right.
He's crazy. He's the guy that went to Liberty. Did he go to Liberty? He went somewhere like that.
He went to Liberty.
And he wrote his thesis on how, like, what was it, women leaving the household were hurting families or something. I mean, something positively out of, like, the 1880s. You know, and, I mean, he's not conservative. I mean, at what point, like, the I'm purer than thou, I'm holier than thou, I don't know at what point that ends for these people. Right. You know, where is it that you – I mean, you know, Tom Latham wasn't going to be conservative enough in Iowa, a guy who's very right-wing, but he just doesn't happen to be just quite as crazy as Steve King.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where this ends up. It can't be good because, you know, as a democracy, we need two functioning and reasonable parties. You lose one of them, then the Democrats can become corrupt. That happens under all – you know, I mean, it already has happened to many Democrats. I mean, the problem is, you know, when you've got one party and another party's not even viable, see where that happens anywhere locally, whether it's a you know, rural state that only elects Republicans or certain cities that only elect Democrats. You've got no real competition. It starts to become a problem.
Right. Absolutely. And I just think what I want to just also really, and I think it's very important for us to keep kind of hitting and emphasizing over the next couple of years. I don't think Christie's as strong as people think he is. I think it will be really hard for him to win a primary. But don't let this guy get shifted into the position of being a kind of, you know, charming, roguish center-right guy. He's incredibly right-wing. And just because he's not right-wing enough for, like, you know, the, you know, Iranian Guardian Council faction of the Republican Party doesn't mean he isn't extremely conservative. Anyways, Cliff, this is awesome, man. I love talking with you.
I know. It's a pleasure. I mean, you know, maybe some of the future weeks we just get Sam to shut up a little bit. You know, you guys can talk more and we can chat. I mean, Jesus Christ, that guy hogged the mic.
No kidding.
Like he thinks it's his show or something.
I know.
What a jerk.
So ridiculous. Yeah. I told you earlier, would I say it was making sense with Alan Keyes would be like being Gentile with Sam Cedar?
Oh, you should totally do that.
One.
That'd be such a great show.
All right. Thanks so much, Cliff.
All right. Well, listen, guys, be in touch. And I'm going to, from now on Sam's show, demand that you get more talk time.
Ooh.
That's where I'm at.
All right, I like it.
Look at that.
Yeah, you ready for it? Wait, hold on 1 second, Cliff.
We're a bit more liberal with the soundboard than Sam is over here.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. Well, exactly. And you guys heard this live, everyone listening to this show, which is what we've done here is we've formed a union. Let's see Sam try to break our union.
Yeah.
Let's see him get a union bust, all right?
Boss Cedar will be back in town after the vacation. But
at any rate,
have a great day, Cliff. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys, and have a great weekend, all right?
All right, man. Talk to you soon. Bye, Cliff.
All right, bye.
I really do like talking to Cliff.
That was good.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
You two were on – I just sat back because I saw you two were on fire. So I was like, what am I going to add to this? I got nothing.
Oh, that's crazy. I don't buy that. See, the thing with Matt is such a nice dude. And, like, then he adds this self-deprecation element
to
it.
It's fun to do.
I don't like it.
It's a good time.
It also makes the person on the receiving end of the compliment. It puts them in really dangerous territory. Because, like, oh, thanks, dude. And then you go, yeah, I'm awful. And I'm like, what if you're on automatic pilot? And you're just like, oh, yeah, totally right. Yeah, you're awful. Yeah.
If I'm awful and I think you're good, then where my range lies.
Yeah, your judgment is bad. Listen, folks, we're going to switch up because we have a film conversation coming up with Matt and film guy Matthew Weiss.
And a few guests as well. A
couple of secret guests.
All right, let's get to it.
All right, let's get to it. We're going to
make a switch. We'll be right
back. Okay.
We are back on the show. My name, I was a bit hot there. All right. We are back. My name is Matt Binder, and on the phone, we have Film Guy Matthew. And, but before we get to Film Guy Matthew, we need to play the Film Guy Matthew theme song. Michael will handle this perfectly.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such things. Maybe you'll want to learn a few things. Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew!
Perfectly.
Matthew! Please recommend me a movie to stream. Matthew! Matthew! Film guy!
Ah, Matthew Film Guy, I just love your song so much. I don't know if you heard it, but it was playing and it's wonderful, as usual.
I can hear it in my mind anytime I talk to you guys. I love that song too. Thanks again to Jason Pace for rocking that out. Thanks for having me on, guys. Always good to be with you.
Thank you for doing it. I'm going to say this in advance. I contacted Matthew Film Guy literally minutes before the show began, and he pulled through because Matthew Film Guy is a true film critic professional.
Thank you. And as we know, I'm always sitting by the phone waiting for you or Sam to call me every Friday just in case. So
I do have to add that that's a bit of a lie because I did call you and you did not answer at first. So you were not quite waiting by the phone, but you did call back right away.
Well, you're lucky. I don't usually call back missed calls that don't leave a message that I don't recognize the number. But this morning I just was feeling magnanimous. And what do you know? It worked out for both of us because I love being here.
I would say actually probably – I know you're being very kind, but it definitely worked out for us a little bit more.
Well, that's too kind of you. Please.
All right. So let's get to it. I know you didn't have a lot of time to – I know you usually – well, for those who are not familiar with Matthew likes to pick – amazing films. Like he's a real, you know, film connoisseur. Matthew loves the film industry and always brings us a wonderful film that usually I've never even heard of. Many times a foreign film, not really in a genre. Not saying I don't love foreign films. I'm big into foreign films, but not usually the genres that Matthew brings here. But let's see what he's got when he doesn't have the full week to prepare, or day, or whenever Sam gives you the call.
Well, I thought that since it's you guys filling in for Sam, Sam doesn't watch the movies I recommend usually anyway, that I would curtail my recommendations for you guys.
Oh, great. So you're going to dumb them down a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm coming down on the quality, but I'm Well, I want to give you something you're going to enjoy. I'm not here to tell you to eat your broccoli and, you know, drink your wheatgrass juice, but if you find pleasure and release in some more mass entertainment, then I'm happy to provide. And I enjoy it too. So that's a side of my personality I'm happy to indulge with you guys.
Amazing. Let's get to it.
So having said all that, I know that you got into Doctor Who recently. Am I right, Matt?
That is correct. Yes, it is.
Well, I wondered if you've had the opportunity or the inclination to check into Torchwood, the spinoff that Russell Davies did a few years into his run on Doctor Who.
I have not. And there's a reason, and the reason is I don't think I'm far enough in the series yet where I should be watching Torchwood. Is that a reasonable answer?
That's semi-possible. I can't remember exactly what season of Doctor Who it came out. I think into the third season, perhaps. But if you've been introduced to Captain Jack Harkness, which you probably have if you've just watched the first season.
Yes, he was a great character.
The time traveler. He has his own spinoff, and I have to honestly, I can really strongly recommend the third season of Torchwood. Even if you haven't really muddled through the first two, which are really hit and miss, the third season, which is a 5-episode short season, I really have to say is one of the best sci-fi kind of fantasy dramas ever to be put on television. While it does help to watch the other shows to sort of know the backstory, I think it would stand alone to just go to season 3. And for all the listeners out there who may not want to invest all their time, season 3 is amazing. It's only 5 episodes, and it tells a great, contained sort of cinematic narrative.
Is there a reason that season was only 5 episodes?
Well, you know, in England, they do television production just slightly differently, and I think that they wanted to use their budget in they wanted to do more big budget but fewer episodes. They didn't stretch it.
It
paid off. It really paid off. It's a great gripping narrative, and it does build on what came before. But I have to tell you that unless you're a diehard Doctor Who fan, the first two seasons are very inconsistent. But by the time they get into the third season, they hit on all cylinders, and it sort of stands as a film, of like a 5-hour film.
Did they try to really connect Doctor Who into the first two seasons? Is that why a lot of crossover type stuff?
No, actually not at all. In fact, really? Quite the opposite. His name is mentioned a little bit, sort of as a why isn't he here to save the day kind of question at some point in season three. But no, it actually stands so much on its own, and that's one of the things that's great about it. It sort of does stand as a self-contained science fiction film. Like, again, even if you didn't really know the total backstory, it works. And it's got kind of elements of sort of government espionage, alien invasion, and all the kind of stuff that made Torchwood great, including some of the bisexual and homosexual storylines, which they were really trying to shoehorn into the first two seasons. I mean, you can really honestly say the show had a gay agenda for all intents and purposes. And it was a little ham-fisted at the beginning, but it comes to a great conclusion. The romantic story between two of the male leads is handled really well. It's one of the most poignant aspects of season three. You know, of course, apart from the world's children being taken over by an alien entity, which makes them speak as one.
That sounds like a Doctor Who episode, actually.
You know, it does have an element of one of Russell T. Davies, who wrote that earlier episode where children are taken over. But this goes much further and expounds on it.
That sounds I'm going to get into Torchwood, so I'm not going to take your advice to just jump to the third season. But now I am very intrigued in getting to Torchwood, and I'm very intrigued into getting to that third season.
Well, I appreciate that, Matt. I know you're hardcore. You will watch it from the beginning, as any hardcore fan would.
That's true.
You know, I also wanted to say that I had a recommendation for Michael, who I don't assume is a sci-fi kind of guy like we are.
Give me one second, because Michael's having some tech difficulties.
I'm good. Go ahead.
Let me go over and fix Michael's mic for a second. Give me one second.
I think it's fine.
Oh, you got it?
How does that – can you hear me?
Oh, look, that's perfect.
Okay, go ahead, please. Sorry about that.
Okay, no problem. Yeah. Michael, you haven't talked much about what your sort of entertainment or art consumption of tendencies are, but I could tell what they're not in a little bit. So I wanted to drop something on you that actually isn't legally available, but for some reason they're all available on YouTube. So it's a British comedy show called Brass Eye.
Called what?
Brass Eye.
Brass Eye.
And it's directed by the guy, Chris Morris, who I recommended a film, I think before your tenure, called Four Lions, which was the comedy about the four Muslim terrorists in England.
Have you seen that yet, Michael? That's a really good movie.
No, I got to. That's on my list.
Oh, yeah.
Really,
that's
good.
On my list. You've got
I love
that movie. It's an amazing film. I recommended it to Sam, and he loved it. So this is his earlier comedy sort of news magazine parody. It's sort of like a Dateline parody, and it's totally absurd in a kind of Monty Python way, but with a real sort of satirical, political satire bent, and I think you'll love it. And it was actually recommended to me while I was on the set of one of Sam Cedar's films, Name Drop Friday. I know Sam Cedar.
You know Sam Cedar too? That's pretty.
I do.
Small world.
Isn't that great that I'm dropping Sam's name on Name Drop Friday?
That's awesome.
Small world.
Turned out to be one of my favorite sort of British comedy pieces ever, and it's by a guy who did an earlier show called The Day Today, which was more like a sort of local news parody. And if you could find that, that's great too. But I did notice that Brass Eye is on YouTube in parts, or you could buy the DVD I think from Amazon UK. But I highly recommend you getting into it because it is hilarious, irreverent. And I think you will get into it.
I would love – that sounds great. Actually, there's this other British show called The Thick of It, which I'm a huge fan of, which is like a really good political satire. So,
and I know you said that pick was for Michael, but I got something out of it too.
Crossover between the world of The Thick of It and Chris Morris.
Oh, yeah. No, I would love.
What's his name? Armando Iannucci, who's the main guy behind The Thick of It. He also worked on The Day Today, and he crossed over with Alan – The Alan Partridge Show, Knowing Me, Knowing You. I don't know if you ever got into that. There's a whole world of great British comedy that you can draw a big flow chart with, and they're connected.
Oh, I'm totally into it. Thanks. That's a great recommendation.
We got tons of picks here. And
yes,
you're on fire today, Matthew Film Guy. Jeez. Before we move on, because we do have a treat, actually. I'd like you to stay on the line if you have time. Let's quickly – we got some good reviews last time we did this. What do you think of last week's Walking Dead?
You know what? Last week's Walking Dead, very interesting you bring it up. I wasn't sure if we were going to get into it, but it basically depicts one of my main – problems with the show. Now, I liked it. It was gripping. It was well done, but it stretched out a plot point to an entire episode, that another sort of maybe more brisk show, so a show that believes in itself a little bit more, would have used for about a half an episode. And the other thing is, it kind of the other main thing that I didn't bring up last time in our discussion with Walking Dead, which granted, I watch every episode and I enjoy the show. It requires some of the characters to be dumb or to make stupid mistakes in order to further the plot. And you're always going, don't go in there, don't do that.
Give me an example. Right. I know what you're talking about, but let's name the example specifically. It's not going to be a spoiler or anything.
You know, basically, Andrea, the entire character of Andrea, she makes blunder after blunder, and you want to like her. But she just can't see the hand in front of her own face. She's making all these stories, choices.
I felt that way too for a long time. And then it kind of occurred to me that, you know what, we're watching a lot of this series, especially in this third season, because we're used to the first and second season where basically everything that went on, everyone in the group knew about because they were all together. This time we're not in one setting. Like, the second season took place completely basically on the farm. This second season switches back from Andrea in Woodbury with the governor and then the rest of the group in the prison. So, I mean, the things we're finding out about the governor behind closed doors and what the prisoners know about – the people at the prison know about the governor. I mean, she doesn't know those things, even though we do. And I feel like a lot of people
– I understand that. But it starts to have this kind of like Three's Company quality where it's like, oh, my God, she thinks this happened, but this really happened. Oh, wow. It's a little convenient – in some sort of narrative sense to my taste, but
I will agree with you. On that point, I won't completely disagree with you. Like I said, I felt that way about Andrea for a while too, but the thing about it's that they stretch out the plot points. You don't think that's done on purpose? I mean, this is supposed to be, you know, it's a zombie apocalypse. The world has changed. This isn't like a fast action type show where things are supposed to be happening quickly. There's no rush. Things actually should be slow. We should be feeling this sort of wait with them. You know, things should be taking a long time. And I mean,
That's a solid point. But I mean, I'm not against slow per se. Some of my favorite films are what you would call very slow and have almost no plot. It's just when you're doing a TV show, you have to replace it with something emotionally engaging. And sometimes that can be like slow burn terror, like last week's episode kind of had. But a lot of times it's sort of, I don't know, they're just padding. It feels empty to me. It doesn't feel like either the actors or the writing isn't sort of insightful enough into their personalities or human nature to really grip me on that other level. Aside from what I'm, you know, let's face it, tuning into to see zombies attack and people go to war with each other.
Well, that's not why. The war thing, that's very much interesting. But the zombies isn't the main part of the show. A lot of people think it is. It's really not. I mean, I bet
you know, the post-apocalyptic world, I enjoy that too. I like to see humanity crumble.
I bet if you were to make a list of all the people who've died on that show, whether it was by the hands of another human being or by the hands of a zombie, the list of zombies of people who died via zombie is going to be a lot shorter than the one who died people who died via human being.
That is a good point.
But I mean, also with that last episode wasn't all about Andrea. There was a lot of we really got to see what's going on with Tyrese and Milton. I mean, I think a lot of things happened in that episode.
Yeah, I like Tyrese. I loved him as Cuddy on The Wire. I don't know if you ever checked into The Wire, but he's an awesome presence on that
best
show.
Best show ever created. Just parenthetical.
I can't stop. What's that, Michael?
Just a parenthetical. That's the best show ever made. But anyways, go ahead, please.
Best show ever. Yeah,
next to The Walking Dead, I agree.
I think the internet voted and The Wire is the best show ever.
Yeah. The internet's actually right.
The Walking Dead wasn't out then, I bet.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, Matt,
Well, go ahead,
Matt. You got to admit, The Walking Dead does not make as many subtle, emotional, and even political choices as even The Wire or its predecessor, Homicide, which was just a cop show. I mean, I don't want to spend this whole time.
Oh no, I agree. This is completely
The Walking Dead because I watch it.
This is completely my opinion. But, I'm very opinionated when it comes to this.
Okay.
I do not think Walking Dead is the greatest show for everybody, but for me, it is the greatest show, which should really influence everybody.
I tune in every week.
All right. Well, we have a – if you want to stay on the line, if you don't have anywhere to go, Matthew, we have actually a treat. We have some more film reviews from some special guests. Yes. Joining us first. This is going to be so
– I love the way it's like –
joining
so
us,
morning
we
zoo.
We really had to pull a lot of strings to do this, and it's something you'll only find on the Matt and Michael version of the Majority Report.
Right.
We pulled some strings, and giving us a movie recommendation is President Barack Obama.
It's good to be with you.
Oh, my God. Thanks, sir. Mr. President, yeah. This is an honor.
It's great to be talking with you, Matt, and Matt.
So, Mr. President, as you know, we do movie reviews here. Give us what do you like?
I only have a moment, but I would say this, that the film Lincoln – it's really, you know, in Washington today, there's a tendency to think in the short term, and I have the film Lincoln synced into my iPad, and it plays on repeat, and Michelle and Malia and Sasha are sick of it, but I'm going to keep watching. It's a great film. Also, John Adams on HBO.
I love that show, Mr. President. That's a great show.
It is a smart man right there. And also The Graduate with Robert Redford.
Oh.
Yeah, that's another great film. But anyways, great talking to you guys.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. President. And speaking of presidents,
Good transition.
We have
Mr. President, you mean the candidate with Robert Redford, right?
That's what I said.
I thought you said The Graduate. I'm sorry.
The candidate.
The president was wrong.
Excuse me.
You were wrong, Mr. President.
Oh, did I say The Graduate?
But I'm sorry.
Initially, they tried to cast Redford instead of Dustin Hoffman, but they nixed that because they didn't want the Rob Redford look for that role. Film expertise right there.
Wow. I didn't know that. Wow. I'm sorry I didn't vote for you, Mr. President.
Whoa!
Don't tell me you're one of those Jill Stein voters. Get off my phone line.
Yeah. I'm one of those throw-away my vote votes.
One of those, I don't like drone attacks. Wah.
I'm sorry.
that was like Obama doing a mocking of a joke.
Yeah, this is a line of Obama we've never seen. This is breaking some news here.
We are breaking news.
That was very meta.
Well... What am I doing? All right. Mr. President, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We have someone else on the line. We have, speaking of presidents, former President Bill Clinton.
Wait, I thought it was Bush first.
Well, is Bush on the line? Oh, I'm sorry. I grabbed the wrong phone. Let's go to Bush first. My bad.
I have Bush all queued up. Have you ever seen, I don't know if you've ever seen Major League 2. Just reminds you of the tragedy. Tragedy of Charlie Sheen because he was so talented. It makes the recent troubles all the more upsetting. Mighty Ducks 3, also a great film. And I have a controversial view on the Crocodile Dundee series. I think
What is it?
Crocodile Dundee Returns is better. Sequels are usually better.
You think so?
Yeah, like I was better than my dad.
Oh!
All right, I'm going to go paint a dog.
Mr. Bush, I think I will agree with you about Crocodile Dundee. I think you're right on that one.
Wow, that's amazing. When I could agree with some Jew film guy from Queens about a movie, we can come together and solve our problems. Maybe that black guy in the White House is right.
Oh, my God. Let's get Bush off the line and go to our final guest, former President Bill Clinton. Thank you for joining us.
First of all, it's a pleasure to be with all of you so much. Thank you.
So, Mr. Clinton, I hear you're a big fan of movies.
What's strange is that when I do this voice, I just go into the Barack Obama, but I don't actually do that. I want to recommend the really fascinating and timely documentary, Inside Deep Throat. Also,
rest in peace.
Also, Naked Ambition. an interesting look at the pornography industry that's also available on Netflix.
After, you got a theme going.
After porn ends, which is a really timely look at
you already said
what
timely
these,
for the
what
last
these
one.
Women look do after their careers end and what they're looking to do next. And we're looking to link up with them and do some work with the Global Initiative and how they could possibly help relief efforts in Haiti. And also Private Parts. Have you seen Private Parts, Matthew? Howard Stern film?
Yes, I have.
That's a great, that's
was,
a great film.
That was great.
I like you. I like how I like how the president had to clarify the Howard Stern film as if you would accidentally think you, my own. I mean, what was the point of that?
I was just trying to engage in some banter, which you destroyed.
This was a lot yeah. funnier when we were talking about it before the show.
Well, to be fair, and Matthew, I'm sorry we subjected you to this. What happened was
not at all.
We were literally at a loss.
And then
you came through.
You really came through for us, Matthew.
You guys didn't know you could count on me. Come on.
We should always know. You're the man.
So I
support you guys. I'm ready for the Majority Network to.
I'm surprised you say that.
Your own show.
I'm surprised you say that.
Thanks,
after
man.
That last segment. I really am.
It wasn't that bad.
All right.
Guys, don't give up the bit. That was great.
the voices will continue. I think that bit will not return, but the impressions will stay.
They'll live on forever.
Yes.
All right, Matthew.
Michael, you got to give us more Obama for sure.
That there's a potential of a contingency of that happening.
Well, I didn't mean right now.
All right, man.
So Torchwood third season. And what was the other one?
Brass Eye.
Thank you.
Brass Eye by Chris Morris.
Awesome.
You're welcome, guys.
Thank you so much, Matthew.
Thanks, man.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We are way over.
Yeah,
so
we're way over.
I guess we might be doing a freebie but we'll still go to the let's just go right into the
yeah, let's go. We only have a few minutes left.
All right. I'm going
to
call into the phones right here. I'm going to turn on the IM machine. Give me a second here.
I don't know. I think I was trying to get to a cliff. I really think that we need to be very wary of Chris Christie getting framed as a kind of moderate, commonsensical choice. Because in any other universe or context or moment in recent political history, that guy is very, very well to the right.
Oh, of course.
But I have to say, too, I also think it's like a Giuliani thing. I mean, you remember when Giuliani was running for president in like 2006, and people said, oh, my God, he's America's mayor, and he's polling so well. And I think – and I always said, yeah, let that guy out of anywhere outside of – let that guy out of anywhere besides, the tri-state area, and nobody's going to have any interest in – just even on a personal level. And I think there's some of a similar thing with Chris Christie. I don't think that kind of obnoxious, blustery thing plays well in the middle of the country.
Let's go right to the phones.
Okay.
585. Where are you calling from? What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, it's Michael calling from Rochester. How you doing?
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
Good. I don't want to sound redundant, but and I'm sure you're sick of hearing it, but you guys have been doing a great standing job for us, Sam.
Oh, I am never sick of hearing it.
Sick of hearing it. Are you kidding me?
I can't get enough.
Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. And I listen to the podcast. I don't know how related this is to what you've been talking about recently, but, you know, I've been thinking about this 10th anniversary of the war in Iraq, and I was ambivalent about going into Afghanistan, but I thought we really had to do it. But I was dead set against going into Iraq.
Right.
And I was thinking back to 10 years ago when things were getting ginned up for that. My wife had actually bought me a gym membership, so I'd go in the gym in the morning. And back then, you didn't have much choice in terms of what you could watch. And one of the things that I would always have on would be Fox and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And
of course.
It was... Well, the thing is I've always thought that if you had to go to school and you could only take two subjects, I think the two subjects that you would take to prepare you best for life would be math and history. I mean, math kind of explains everything, you know, how things work, and history kind of helps explain how we got where we are. And anybody who had any sense or knowledge of history and was watching things like Fox and Friends knew they were getting snowed. I mean, it was classic propaganda. And if they knew, I mean, basically, what did they do? They hyped up the threat. I mean, this country that lost to Kuwait and lost to Iran is going to send their power halfway around the world and bomb us. I mean, get real.
Mm-hmm.
But they hyped up the threat. Anyone who was on there who disagreed with was basically, you know, trash. I remember Scott Ritter was on there, and the Chiron underneath them was like Ritter's rant or something like this. It was just unbelievable.
Right.
And, you know, so I was never convinced, and I can remember getting into some very, very vociferous arguments with people about, you know, how stupid it was to go into Iraq. And
yep.
Now people are doing all these, you know, mea culpas and stuff like this, and, oh, I was wrong, and yada, yada. But I'm seeing it happening again, and it's happening again, not with Iran, but with something actually far worse. And that's climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have
that's
a small but growing number of people saying climate change is real, it's dangerous, you know, it's going to get us. And then you have a lot of people that say no, you know, whether they're just lazy, they don't want to do anything about it, they're in denial, I don't know what. But we're seeing right now in real time the initial effects, basically the first shots in this climate war that we're declaring on ourselves. I mean, look what's happening, you know, down in, you know, with Hurricane Sandy and everything else. Now they're talking about getting several of those a year within the foreseeable future. So,
no,
you know, we may have learned something about going to war, but we sure haven't learned anything about dealing with problems. That's for sure.
No, I think that's a great point, really, really good point. Thank you so much for the call. I mean, I just think, though, that, you know, the only thing I would reflect for a moment on Iraq, I was talking with somebody about a friend of mine about this the other day. When I was, I don't remember how old I was. It was before I could vote, obviously, but sometime in high school, the Supreme Court issued the ruling that gave Bush the presidency. Then 3 years later,
right.
We went to war based off of what, even for me, I mean, you know, I just remember I listened to the BBC. You know, that's mainstream British press coverage.
Yep.
And then it would come out and say, like, look, you know, the British just released this terrifying report about how Iraq had launched WMDs in 30 minutes, which sounds ludicrous in and of itself. But literally, this report was plagiarized from a PhD dissertation. And that came into fake intelligence report issued by the British government. So, you know, and then in 2008, you had the massive financial meltdown. So I think that what we've had is the kind of defining moments, I think, especially for someone like, you know, I guess I'm speaking generationally, but these three moments that were just so bankrupt, so fraudulent,
yeah.
You know, almost, I mean, literally
yeah.
and figuratively. And I think the thing with climate
yeah,
change, you know, and I think it's just, and I think with climate change that it's just this aggregation of laziness, of there's corruption. And then it's also is a genuinely unbelievably complex problem that requires so much coordination and so much effort
yep.
across so many sectors that people would prefer to bury
yep.
their heads in the sand. But as you say, it's coming at us. It's not stopping. And I mean, this is the most non-negotiable
yep.
thing in the world, because it's like when you start, you know, when politics meets just like actual objective systemic realities, you know, that's a different thing. I mean, we could do all sorts of horrible things with the budget or even going to war or whatever. And those are, you know, their choices in a different way than making our planet uninhabitable. So I think you're totally right on. And I don't have total pessimism about it. I think there's positive examples from different parts of the world. I think there is a lot of innovation in business. I think there's some great social movements starting around climate change. But yeah, I mean, it seems really daunting to me. I mean, it's very hard to not be pessimistic, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's really something. I mean, I hope the thing is with climate change, you have to put aside short-term gain or short-term discomfort for longer-term goals that you may
right.
not even realize.
Right.
And that's kind of the thing that it's almost impossible to get a few people to do, let alone a lot of people to do. So it's really a pretty grim prospect. But you know, I'm hoping that I'm hoping against hope that things will change. But boy, I mean, I'm glad I'm not living in Australia right now. It's kind of like a preview of what's to come.
Yeah, no
but,
kidding. Thanks
anyway,
so much for the call, man.
I just want to say, keep up the good work, guys.
Thanks, you,
Michael.
Have a great day.
You too.
All right, let's go to some of the IMs. Again, that number is 646-257-3920 if you'd like to call in. We'll go a little bit over today. We started a little bit late. It's Casual Friday. It's a Freebie Friday. A squared. Happy Easter. Happy Friday. Happy Spring Easter and Passover. And thanks for carrying on with the show. Yesterday, commentary on Rushbow, ridiculous comments about Beyonce's new song. It was funny and insightful. In the end, it's whatever he can do to twist and misinterpret to continue with his overall denigration of women and argue for subservience as a value. Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
Bad Wagon. Wow, Michael, those impressions are amazing. But as a longtime listener, I gotta say, no one can touch Sam's W. Get back! Engage!
No, I mean, Sam has, like, he has the best bush I've ever heard.
He's
and I'm
perfected
talking,
it
like,
over the
I'm
years,
talking, but
though.
I'm talking, oh, but I'm even, like, I would put that up against Will Ferrell's. Like, he has a really good bush.
Yes.
He has a really good bush.
If Matt the Film Guy is still listening, I have a British comedy series to recommend to him and y'all. It's called The Green Wing, and it ran only for 3 seasons on the BBC. It's smart, silly, and really hilarious. I highly recommend it, but I have no idea where you could find it. Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you. I see the 2 callers on the line right now. There's more coming on. Just hold on. We'll get to you right away. Geeky Dork Girl would love to hear Michael do Clinton and Obama with Sam with Sam doing Bush.
That's really easy for Sam.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You have to go back and forth.
There would be a lot of as I transitioned.
100 and a bunch of numbers. It's William Shatner's birthday. Can Michael do a Shatner voice?
I am totally unable to do a Shatner voice. I think partially because it's like Shatner himself is doing a Shatner voice. You know what I'm saying?
That's true. Dylan Radigan. I'm sorry. Bishan985. Dylan Radigan will be on Martin Bashir's show today at 4 p.m. Don't forget to watch him. Dylan. That is Dylan, not Martin.
That's what he wrote.
Yes. All right.
I kind of like Martin. All right. Anyway.
He's
all right.
He's Martin.
All right.
207. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey.
Who do you think this is? Do you recognize the voice?
Oh, is it Sam?
This my friend is not Sam, but someone who's a long-time listener and contributor to this wonderful program.
Is this
and
one of the...
You guys have been doing an awesome job.
Who is this?
Oh, come on now, people. Think. Think, man. Who's the guy...
Is this Jimmy Reefercake? Is this Jimmy Reefercake?
Yes, indeed.
I'm going to get...
Hey!
I'm going to get fired now thinking you were Sam Cedar. Oh, wait. It's a good thing today.
Awesome.
It's a good thing today is a Freebie Friday, and we have Jimmy on the line. Let's play Jimmy's song that he sent to us.
Where is it?
It's because
he lied?
Yeah, so bring up the...
All right, Jimmy, bear with me for a second.
Michael's doing soundboard right now,
Michael,
so give us a second.
Michael, I love the impressions, man. And you, maybe after the song, you give a little bush. I know it's not Sammy's bush, but it could come in handy.
You know what?
Jimmy,
anything you want, Jimmy.
Stay
just
on the line.
Stay on the line.
While
we're going to play your song, okay?
This is breaking anything that's ever happened on this show before. I don't think we've ever had Reefer
This is amazing.
On the show as his song played.
All right. Hold on.
Starting a war on St. Patrick's Day, are we? Well, that's no way to get into the pearly gates now, is it? No, I don't reckon we'll forget it. 10 years looking back on the war in Iraq. Bush, Cheney, and the neocons. Fox News shocking our telethon. This bloody oil war. Remember what it started for. Because they lie. All those bombs fell from the sky. Now he paints watercolors. He's taking baths to wash away his sins. He waged a war blunders. A web of lies caused their lies to end. Because he lied, all those people died. He knew he couldn't tell the truth to make us willingly send our youth to war. What for? What the hell are we fighting for anymore? It was to get the oil money. It wasn't about that WMD. Nah, nah, now. Now he paints watercolors. He's taking baths to wash away his sins. He waged a war of blunders. However, lies have caused their lives to end. It's not about regret. The this is about to repent. Promise is broken, dub, you broke the oath of a president. Do you realize how much we despise your lies? Yeah, yeah, your lies. Oh, your lies.
Jimmy, that was great.
That is awesome.
That is seriously one of your best. I'm not even because you're on the line. I would have said that.
No, that's a great song, man. Love it.
You kept the anger off my chest.
We could tell you were angry in that one. I think the only thing that angers you more than marijuana not being legal is George W. Bush, because that was that was ferocious. That was great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It really does. It pisses me off, man. It pisses me off.
It should piss you off. Bush is hard. I mean, that was great. That was great.
You know, and that's why your show is so important. I mean, just to me in general, the cable news, the whole establishment there, I decided I don't need the TV part of cable. I just need the internet. I'm keeping my money and, saving it up to become a member one day.
Awesome.
I appreciate the members for doing what they do, man.
Oh, yes. Thank you, members, of course. And if you're not a member, today would be a great day to join.
Absolutely. We would get credit for it.
This is a freebie Friday, baby.
It's a freebie Friday, exactly. That's what that and
look,
I will
got,
do.
We have both Matt, me, myself, Matt, Michael, and Jimmy Reefer Cake telling you freebie listeners to become a member today. I don't think that's ever happened before.
No.
Get it going, guys. And you know, I'm on iTunes. I have an album. You can get it and support what I'm doing over at allthehypocrisy.com. I put up my songs there, and then I mix them down and try to make them sound a little better. On my next album, I think you guys are going to really like a lot. I put some of the old ones and retooled them. So I appreciate all the fans and you guys for just giving me the airtime.
Oh, it's a pleasure, man.
Thank you for
bringing
always
sending
giving
us all this work.
This great music, yes.
Here, before you sign off, I'll do really quick. I'll say, even though Jimmy Reefer Cake is totally gay for not supporting liberating Iraq, his music is cool, and I enjoy listening to it in the shower as well as outside of the shower. So go to All the Hypocrisy website.
If you wonder where Bush gets the inspiration for his painting.
Oh, that's unfair to Jimmy. Yeah.
That's
all right, I'm just doing a plug. Jimmy's not inspiring any of Bush's painting.
He's not too bad, actually.
After hearing my song.
All right, Jimmy.
I can just imagine. What if W does hear that song? He's got to think about what he did.
He's
going
to go for a big, long bike ride after he hears
he's
that
gonna,
song.
He's going to say, wow, what an incredible song. I got to go paint myself
you
a corgi.
He's going to say, that's, you know, first of all, it's Dick Cheney's fault. So stop. Get off my ass. All right.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Take it easy, guys. Keep it up.
Take care, buddy.
All right. I'm going to do a quick story here, and then we'll get to you on the phone, and we'll finish up the show. I thought this was an interesting story. Let's say you're an 18-year-old, and you decide to, you know, you're with your friends hanging out. You're in high school. And you go past a local bingo hall. Maybe you live in a town like Covington, Kentucky. And you go into the local bingo hall and you sit down, play a game of bingo. And you decide, wouldn't it be hilarious to shout out bingo when there is no bingo? What a childish prank. But then again, you're in high school. That's what happened to Austin Whaley. He went into the Covington, Kentucky bingo hall and he yelled bingo. Now, what happened to Austin Whaley that probably wouldn't have happened to you is that police sergeant Richard Webster was there, and he decided to arrest Austin Whaley, 18-year-old Austin Whaley, a high school student, for yelling out bingo in the bingo hall. What did police sergeant Richard Webster have to say? At first, everybody started moaning and groaning when they thought they'd lost. When they realized it wasn't a real bingo, they started hooting and hollering and yelling and cussing. People take their bingo very seriously. So, apparently, though,
not only do those people take Bingo very seriously, Sergeant Webster does too. Because Sergeant Webster went on to arrest him, and he continued on, just like you can't run into a theater and yell fire when there is no fire, you can't run into a crowded bingo hall and yell bingo when there isn't one. He just equated those two, which is unbelievable in itself. Thankfully for young Austin Whaley, Sergeant Webster isn't the one charging him, giving him the sentence to these charges. Kenton District Judge Douglas Grothaus showed some leniency, to say the least, and instead of the maximum punishment of 90 days in jail and $250 fine for shouting bingo when there was no bingo at a bingo hall.
It's a big deal.
The judge said that he, young Austin Whaley, could not say the word bingo for 6 months. If he successfully does not say the word bingo after 6 months, the charges will be dismissed. I mean, what is going on here? I mean, it's a silly story. It's funny, but what is happening? Like, really? Really? Like, this is police state gone wild. Like, what is going on here? This is just, like, unbelievable.
I don't really know what more there is to add to that. I mean...
Yeah, really. You can't really say anything funny about it because the story in itself is just ridiculous. All right, let's go to the... I guess we'll just have a last phone call of the day. Last phone call of the day.
Charge.
Wow, that's not the one, I think, but... All right, here we go. 914. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
It's Jermo.
Jermo!
Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
It's going good. How are you? Thank you.
Listen, I got to tell you, this show, this is why this show is so good. Jimmy Reefer takes calls, but guess who mentioned, Cliff was the first one to mention and give credit to Jimmy Reefer take today. So it came right around, everything came around so nicely. But Cliff is so terrific. I tweeted you guys this week and I said, you know, I'm a little worried about Cliff. He's going to say something. I know he's just going to say something. And he did. He did. You got to admit, Cliff did say something that, you know, I love what he says, but he says, tell Sam to shut up. Did you guys pick that up?
We did, yes.
No, I didn't hear any of that.
I picked that one up.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, Cliff gets rowdy.
Because what a great show. Great week, guys. You guys are terrific.
Thanks, Jeremo.
Thanks, guys. You have a good weekend.
You too.
Thanks.
Take care, buddy.
Take care. Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, folks. I think that's... What?
You want to take another call?
We are.
Is there another call?
No, we're good with the calls. We got to everybody.
Awesome.
Someone dropped off though, so.
Okay.
But we got everything. We're wrapping it up, folks. This is a Freebie Friday. So if you're not already a member, please become a member today. You can support this show by going to majority.fm and becoming a member. Become a member at the. There's a link up top. Other than that, you can follow us on Twitter at MajorityFM. You can follow myself and Michael Brooks on Twitter. My Twitter name is at Matt Binder. Michael Brooks's Twitter name is at _ Michael Brooks. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/majority report. You can subscribe to us on YouTube, youtube.com/Sam Cedar. Remember, we are now live every day that we are usually live for the audio show on YouTube as well now with a YouTube live stream. You can watch that at the Sam Cedar YouTube channel. You can donate your account at donateyouraccount.com and donate both your Facebook and Twitter accounts. If you've already donated your Facebook account in the past, Facebook has changed something with their account permissions and you might need to re-donate your account, so check that out. Go to iTunes and give us a review. I was looking at our iTunes reviews the other day and they're all great, but we haven't received any in a while. Let's get that ball rolling again. Let's get some more reviews on there. And got great things coming up for you these coming weeks. We will be live on Monday with another episode of the Matt and Michael version of the Majority Report. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the following Monday, that's 5 days total, we will have a combination of new material and pre-recorded. Well, that's still new material. And then we'll have some archive stuff for members. We might take a day off, but other than that, I mean, that who else has new material provided for you when they're supposed to be on a vacation? We got one more IM. I guess we'll go to this one more IM. Kay Cruz, you did... I never knew how to say this. Yeoman's work? Is that it?
Yeoman's. Yeoman's
work, gentlemen. Why, thank you, Kay
Cruz. Thank you.
All right, folks. Thank you for once again putting up with us. I hope you enjoyed yesterday and today, and I hope you'll enjoy Monday. See you soon. Have a great weekend.
Great weekend, folks.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive. Between the 101 and the 5. Do you know? Takes you. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining shifted in and out of